It's time to play like a Jet with your host, Scott Mason.
Play like a Jet. What does that mean?
Mekhi Becton, ladies and gentlemen, human beings that large should not run as fast as Mekhi Becton did. And if you like people just abusing other humans, the Mekhi Becton tape is for you.
Denzel Mims with another monster score of 70 yards.
Quick pass to Crowder, trying to get him out of space. Slips a tackle, and there he goes. Crowder, it's a foot race, and Crowder is in there. A 69-yard touchdown.
Darnold escapes, trying to buy himself some time. Fires end zone. It's caught. Incredible play by Darnold.
Hill hit immediately.
He got the handoff.
You know and that's
the Q-inator.
Oh, my gosh.
Listen, thank you.
From the TOJ Digital Studio, this is Play Like a Jet. My name is Scott Mason. You can follow me on Twitter at PlayLikeAJet1. And we're going to do some mailbag questions today. We'll have more tomorrow as well, along with the pregame report. Normally, we would do the pregame report on Sunday with mailbag questions. But because the Jets are playing on Monday, a little mailbag today, a little more mailbag tomorrow with the pregame report. So, as always, we bring in the owner, the operator, the lead reporter, the whole shebang. Over at JetsInsider.com. And above all of that, a very big deal, Mr. Chris Nimbley. What's going on, Chris?
Not much, you know, just thankful that you reminded me that the game was on Monday because I was operating. I was joking with you about this, that this is obviously a little bit of a crazy, hectic week right now, and I decided to make this the bye week for me instead just so I can stay off the internet. And, you know, obviously COVID brain and the time doesn't exist anymore. So you mentioned it right before you started. I was like, oh, yeah, it's a Monday night game. That's right. I get to enjoy a Sunday of Jets-free football. That's my favorite thing about the night games. The night I get to just sit down on Sunday and just watch football. And the Jets aren't on my TV. They're not taking up space. It's really going to be a wonderful thing.
The 0-8 Jets versus the 2-5 Patriots. Boy, that's going to be something that the nation will be captivated by. Now that I think about it, Chris, even though I was joking, as those words came out of my mouth, they still sounded even more insane than I imagined, even in a facetious way. But I do think that people are going to be captivated by the presence of a 6'7", 365-pound rookie offensive tackle by the name of Mekhi Becton. You saw that viral video going around of that highlight from the Chiefs game with Becton and Alex Lewis just tossing Frank Clark aside like a ton of bricks. And Andy Vasquez of NorthJersey.com, our buddy who comes on the show to do the post-game report, has a great article up talking about Mekhi Becton and his rookie season. He's got a bunch of fun quotes here. Here's one from Becton. I find it funny when asked about the viral moments. That's what I do in a day in, day out basis. So I've got to keep it going so I can keep getting those reactions. And he says, it doesn't mean anything if I don't keep on playing the way I'm playing, referring to all the hype that he's been getting now. I got to keep tunnel vision. I got to keep my head forward. Just got to keep my head down and keep working. Every day, I've got to keep getting better. I'm just a rookie. I haven't done anything yet. And then he says about going up against the Patriots, who have been the gold standard of the NFL for the past 20 years. It means a lot going against anybody, but the Patriots, they're the Alabama of the NFL, so it's great to go against the best. Always fun to go against the best. You want to be the best. If you want to be the best, you've got to beat the best. So I don't know if he's a Ric Flair fan, but he just channeled Ric Flair with that quote. And then he also says that he doesn't like losing at all. He hates it more than he likes winning. But he's an offensive lineman, so all he can do is show up every day. It doesn't matter what the scoreboard says. He's got to do his job no matter what. That's just his mindset. He's trying to keep tunnel vision, keep his head down, and do what he's supposed to do. So you got to love it from Becton. Some funny stuff there, but mostly just the guy who realizes his place on the team. He's a rookie. A lot of people think very highly of him, but he's trying to stay grounded and stay humble the way that his parents raised him and the way that he's always tried to be. And so despite all the hype and all the viral videos and everybody talking about him tossing guys 30 feet in the air, he's going to just keep plugging along, and try to be the absolute best offensive lineman that he can be in the vision of his trainer, Duke Manyweather.
Yeah, listen, there's a lot to love about Mekhi Becton. Obviously, just his size, his speed, his power. You can see it. We talked about it before the draft, when he got drafted, about how he had some technique issues, fundamental stuff. He was a little raw, needed to be ironed out. And you brought up Duke Manyweather, who did an excellent job with him in the offseason, because he came into camp ready to go and was really good from the start. And I talked to training camp about how great he was. The only time he would get beat was when Jordan Jenkins would pull some type of vet move that he hadn't seen. And he's been even better than I expected him to be during the season. I expected a little bit more up and down from him. He's mostly just been up, and he's been playing through that shoulder injury. And I did talk about this in training camp. I said the funny thing about Mekhi Becton, I don't know if I can do this, or if I have to talk to Jets PR to have their in-house media do this. We need to get some type of like segment where it's like Quinnen Williams and Mekhi Becton are in like a buddy cop scenario, except, you know, they're both lovable, big, giant goofballs. So they both just be playing that character, and just follow them around together doing stuff, like send them out fishing or whatever together, have them just clown around with each other, because they're very similar personalities. And they're just big, giant kids. They love to just, like, say silly things and be goofy. But they're both just absolute physical specimens and dominant and powerful. And, but, you know, as bad as everything has been this season for the Jets, the Mekhi Becton has just been an absolute joy to watch. And, you know, I've talked about it. I really wanted to be able to cover somebody like Jerry Jeudy or CeeDee Lamb. Watching Darrell Revis in his prime is the highlight of my career so far, being able to watch that. Those types of positions we talk about, like being able to watch one-on-one more. Offensive line, it's always good to watch offensive line play, but this is the first time that I've covered an offensive lineman where I'm like, glued to watching everything he does, where I'm just mesmerized by what he does. He is so special. And again, he's got this lovable, effervescent personality, and he's just a joy to talk to and just be in his presence. You know, even if it's just Zoom presence, and to see what he's able to do on the field at this young of an age, battling through the shoulder injury is just a joy and pleasure to watch. It's been so much fun.
And Chris, to add on to your fun buddy cop show idea with Quinnen Williams and Mekhi Becton, Becton talked about Quinnen Williams. He said, "Q, that's my guy. That's my big brother, man. We're always going back and forth. I always tell him I could put him on his butt if I really wanted to." So I love the idea of this buddy cop show. And in fact, in the off season, if we know anybody that can draw cartoons, we should put together some fun, jokey cartoons about what that buddy cop series might actually look like, because I feel like that would be some phenomenal off season fun.
Yeah, absolutely. That would be a great idea. I am definitely not drawing is one of those things I wanted to be so much better at drawing than I actually was. I tried diligently when I was a kid. My drawings were good for abstract nonsense only. I cannot draw anything there, but yeah, that would be a great idea. You could come up with a lot of comedy gold in that.
No question about it. I personally think that might be more entertaining than any television show that's on right now. Because we've talked about this, Chris. I know that there are some good shows on. I haven't really sunk my teeth into anything. I'm still going back and rewatching a lot of my favorite classics. But if there was a Becton, Quinnen Williams show on, I would absolutely watch. It would be appointment television, and I think it would be the most entertaining thing that you could possibly watch on any streaming service or any television channel. I will say it would certainly be much more entertaining than what we've seen so far for the first 8 games of the season, as we jump into the mailbag. And you get a hat tip for predicting this, Chris, because JP Waxer says, "Thank you, Chris Nimbley. Back when all the great Jets prognosticators were predicting between 6 and 9 wins for this team, Chris was at camp keeping it brutally honest about how awful everything looked. Can you please recap your training camp thoughts for us so we can have some laughs now in retrospect?
The funny thing is that more on how I was definitely the most negative and I was still too positive about this team. And the funny thing is when I did my prediction and I predicted 4 wins, I really wanted to go to like 2 wins, but really I just didn't have the cojones to do it. I should have done it, but yeah, all training camp long, I talked about how bad the offensive line was, how bad the defense was, how they couldn't get any type of running game, how they're, you know, it was, this is also the other part. I talked about how this offense was going to go as Chris Herndon goes. I said, Chris Herndon is the only thing they got going for them in training camp right now. And Chris Herndon is the key to this offense. If Chris Herndon isn't doing anything, this offense isn't doing anything. And Chris Herndon hasn't done a goddamn thing. So the one good thing they had going through for them in training camp this year and last year, because it goes back to last year, Chris Herndon was the only thing in training camp last year, and he was the only thing this year, and the offense has just been a disaster. And the defense, I get this question every year in training camp when the offense has a good day. People just say, is the offense that good, or was the defense that bad? And then the defense has a good day, and it's the same question in reverse. This year, and it's always a really tricky question to answer. You don't ever really know until the season starts and you see how each unit's do. But this year watching it, I was just like, yeah, they're just both really bad. And there was no better example than the first day that they had a scrimmage. And the first team defense got embarrassed by the back team, the backup offense. And the first team offense got embarrassed by the backup defense. That day right there told us all we needed to know. Neither of the sides ball are good. They're getting beat by backups, and they've been getting beat by backups and the starters on other teams. I mean, the 49ers beat them with essentially all backups. Training camp, judging teams from training camp can be very tricky. But what I saw in training camp was a poorly coached team that was not ready for the season to start. And I talked all offseason about how with COVID, with these different offseason, the practices, the later start to camp, coaching was going to be a bigger deal than ever. And I think we've seen that come out to play, come to fruition here. And the writing was on the wall for how bad all this stuff was. And it can be hard in training camp because people don't want to hear negative. Everybody, you know, that's the beautiful part of the beginning of a season is everybody has a little bit of hope. But just watching them day in and day out of training camp just destroyed and killed my hope. That's why towards the end of camp, I was coming on here and I was just being like, I feel like it's my duty to warn you guys. Like, I know everyone's excited, but this is going to be ugly. And it has been even uglier than I thought.
Amazing that it could be uglier than you thought, considering everything that you were saying during training camp, as you just reiterated. Next question comes in from Harry Skillman. He says, what are the chances Belichick does the most Belichickian thing of all and loses out the rest of the season to leapfrog the Jets in the draft? I don't even know that doing that would leapfrog the Jets in the draft, though, because they have 2 wins already, and it's very possible that the Jets won't exceed that. I also don't think that there's any way the Patriots get the number one pick, even if they did that, because even if the Jets won a couple of games, I don't think the Jaguars are going to. So while it is fun to point to mastermind Belichick and think about how he could scheme his way to Trevor Lawrence, I don't think that's going to happen.
Yeah, and there's still too much talent on that Patriots roster to not expect them to get another win along the way. But if they were winless too, then I'd be all bored. They have to lose 2 more games. So he could throw them both to the Jets, but then they both – they're going to win another game. The Jets – where are the Jets wins coming from? I mean, I don't think Belichick isn't built to be a mastermind to figure out how to lose. So even if he's trying to tank, I think he comes in and he gets outclassed by Adam Gase at being a bad coach. Or Dow Loggins, I should say, because who knows what Adam Gase actually does anymore. So even if he comes in, this isn't Belichick's area of expertise. He shines in being good. I think he will accidentally do some things to beat the Jets still. I don't see that. The Jags are the team that I think you have to worry about the most, and the Jags and also the Texans, and that they still have to play each other a bunch. You would think that Deshaun Watson's good enough for a couple wins, but I'd be more worried about the Texans than the Patriots right now. And I think the Jags are the team that you really are most worried about right now, because especially with Gardner Minshew out, we don't know when he's coming back. Go ahead and take a look at the Jags schedule. Aside from the Texans, there's not a lot of wins on there too. So I think that's the team you have to be most concerned about.
Play like a Jet. Play like a Jet.
Next question comes in from Michael Christopher. He says, when is the last time a true offensive head coach won the AFC East? Would the Jets be wise to go after Joe Brady or a different offensive guy, or go with a defensive CEO type since the other coaches in the division have strong defensive ties and can game plan well? Does this potentially give Wink Martindale more value? The best way I could put this is, and I've said this in a variety of different ways over the last couple of weeks, months, and really even years at this point, it shouldn't matter whether the coach comes from the offensive side of the ball, defensive side of the ball, or special teams. It should matter whether or not the guy exhibits the traits that you believe will make for a successful head coach. So somebody that can run the staff and make great hires, somebody that trusts the right people to develop the right players in the right spots, somebody that is willing to work with the coaches and the general manager and all of that, and willing to overrule his assistants when need be and stand back when he has to, when it comes to ceding ground to the general manager while still fighting tooth and nail for something that he really believes in if he thinks it's important. Keeping order in the locker room, making sure he's got the respect of the players. I could go on and on, but it really shouldn't matter which side of the ball the guy comes from. And this is a big part of the reason why I favor getting somebody who's already proven that they can be a head coach, because when you hire a coordinator, it's a coin flip. You have no idea what you're getting. The guy may have been a successful coordinator, but you don't know that he can succeed as a head coach, because there's so much more that goes into that job than just running the offense. And the same thing applies to somebody who is a defensive coach. So if you go through all of the candidates and you decide that you think Wink Martindale is the best man for the head coach job, then that should be the guy that you pick. And I would imagine that a big part of why you would be comfortable with him is because even though he comes from the defensive side of the ball, he's shown you that he has a plan for how to properly build his offensive staff. This is what makes a successful head coach, not somebody that's good at play calling or somebody whose team racks up a bunch of points. That's certainly nice, but you need somebody that can run everything. So I don't really put any stock into the fact that Belichick was a defensive guy and he's done phenomenally, so that proves you need a defensive guy. Or vice versa with Andy Reid, that he's done so well that it proves you need an offensive guy. The only thing that we know for sure is that the successful coaches are the ones that know how to run the entire team. Joe Brady is somebody that you brought up, Michael, and we have no idea what he would be like as a head coach. Early returns on him as an offensive coordinator in Carolina are pretty good, but that doesn't guarantee anything. And you could go through all the rest of these coordinators and make the same argument. And again, that's exactly why I want somebody who's proven they can be a successful head coach. And just to clarify, and Connor Rogers and I joked about this earlier in the week, just because somebody has head coaching experience doesn't put them into that category. I said successful head coach for a reason, because Adam Gase was a failure as a head coach in Miami, and that's a big part of the reason why he's a failure here in New York. You want somebody who's shown you that they can do this job. If you get a coordinator, it's a coin flip, and at that point, You have to do your due diligence and make the most informed decision you can based on who you think will be the best at running the entire team.
Yeah, I'm going to start off by being a broken record here because this is going to need to keep being repeated until they have a new coach. My assessment on the idea of hiring a defensive coach or offensive coach, I'm good with either one. But until the decision is made, I'm going to lean towards the offensive guy just because I don't know what that defensive guy is going to do with his staff. So from now, if I was making the decision and actually hiring the person, then I would know. I would have that information. But to me, Wink Martindale would be a good hire for a head coach. I'm good with that just as a blanket statement in a vacuum. I'm good with that. But for me to hire Wink Martindale for the Jets and for Trevor Lawrence or Justin Fields, I need to know who he's going to be building his offensive staff with. It makes it a little tricky for me to when I'm ranking my guys, I give the offensive guys of Brian Dabo, Arthur Smith, I'm going to give them a little bit of an edge there just for that reason. I'm totally fine with the idea of a defensive guy. I'm also totally on board with the idea of a special teams coach or just, you know, a CEO type. It's funny, he asked the question, when was the last time an offensive-minded head coach won the AFC East? Now, that's tricky because Bill Belichick has been winning the AFC East for almost 20 years, except for with Tony Sperano. Not Tony Sperano. Oh man, I'm gonna mess this up. I'm gonna skip the joke because I'm gonna botch it. So they went to the Wildcat that year, Pennington, and of course they won it mostly because Brady got hurt and Matt Castle had to play. So that's the answer to the question. Before that, I don't even know, like Marv Levy, like with the Bills, but I don't even know what Marv Levy, where he got his start. So it's mostly the AFC East has been a defensive division, and you see this in football all the time. The divisions kind of, they end up being similar because they try to beat each other and compete against each other. So if you have one a team that's a high offense, the rest of the teams kind of try to compete with them and keep up with them. And the AFC East has been mostly a defensive division for the last 20 years, and again, that's mostly because of Belichick. But you can win either way. You can win with a defensive head coach. You can, like you said, Belichick. You can win with an offensive coach like Andy Reid. You can go more of a down the middle. Like Tom Coughlin wasn't like an X's and O's guy getting in there, and they won there. He was more of a CEO type. Same with Bill Cowher. That's what Mike Tomlin is now. He had his expertise on the defense side of the ball, but he's more of just the CEO type. There's lots of other ways that you can win. There is no one way, like the offense is the best way or the defense. It's just about finding the guy who's the best leader, who can build the best staff, who can be the best leader of men, who can keep the locker room in check. You know, there is a little bit of importance with media. You can't come out and do like, you know, the John Idzik press conference. Like you don't have to be great with media, but you can't come off looking like an incompetent fool in a press conference. So those are the things that matter much, much more. You have to be able to build the staff and trust the right people. That's the hardest part. Is you're hiring somebody who is going to have to make a bunch of decisions going forward. And they're the ones making that decision. You better trust them to make the correct decisions way more than making the wrong ones.
Before we go, let's try and put a few bucks in your pocket. Courtesy of my buddy Walter Cherepinski over at walterfootball.com. He's got your Sunday gambling picks, and you can use those picks to try and make a few bucks at MyBookie. There's no shortage of games to watch and thousands of lines available on all your favorite sports and events. So you can turn your game day into a payday. Head over to MyBookie right now. And when you do, if you use the promo code OVERTIME, you can claim a deposit match dollar for dollar all the way up to $1,000. It's a bonus designed to give you a little help and a head start on your winning season. That's promo code OVERTIME for you to claim your bonus when you make your first deposit over at MyBookie. Walter, let's make some people money this Sunday. Welcome to the show, my man.
Thanks, Scott. So can't be a surprise here. I'm going against the Jets once again. We've gone against the Jets every single week this year, except for the Buffalo game, which I thought, the Bills might look ahead to the Patriots in the second meeting with the Jets. So, this one should be a blowout on Monday night. The Patriots come in with a 2-5 record, but they're a lot better than that record says they are. They had two games where Cam Newton was injured. He hurt his hand hitting it on a Denver helmet. And then they lost to Denver, and then they lost to San Francisco. So if you throw those two games out where Cam Newton was injured, they'd be 2-3. And two of their close losses were against the Seattle and Buffalo. So if those games went the other way, the Patriots would be 4-1, 4-3 with those two losses with Cam Newton being hurt. So if the Patriots were 4-3 right now, this line would be above 10, and it's not. So I think we're getting good value with the Patriots against the Jets, who are starting Joe Flacco, who really shouldn't be in the NFL anymore. Avery Williamson's gone, so that means the Jets are down their top two linebackers. So I have no idea how they're going to stop Cam Newton, and Joe Flacco is not going to score at all against the Patriots. So I like the Patriots a lot. They should win by double digits. Staying in the AFC East, I also like the Dolphins plus 4.5 against the Cardinals. I've been saying it every week. I think the Dolphins are so underrated, and people are starting to catch on, but I don't think they really know how good this Dolphin team is. Miami has such great defense and special teams. I love how well they're coached. Tua Tagovailoa had a rough start in his first game against the Rams last week, but that was against one of the best defenses in the NFL. Now he goes against Arizona, which is missing three of its top four cornerbacks, and it's also missing its top three edge rushers. So Tua's going to have a much easier time in this game, and I think the Dolphins should keep this one close. I think it's going to be decided by a field goal either way. A few other games I like. I like the Colts plus 1 over the Ravens. Everyone keeps saying Lamar Jackson is going to bounce back because he was an MVP last year. I think he was an MVP because of his offensive line. The Ravens had the best offensive line in the NFL last year. They had two potential Hall of Famers with Marshall Yanda and Ronnie Stanley. You know, Stanley's still young, but I mean, he's playing on a Hall of Fame level right now. Unfortunately, he's out for the year, and Yanda retired. The Ravens are also missing another offensive lineman, so they got trouble blocking against the Colts front that's great. I think the Colts, given the injuries the Ravens have, and the Ravens, by the way, could be missing their top two cornerbacks, I think the Colts are the better team, and we're getting points with them at home. It seems like a no-brainer, so I like the Colts at plus 1. I also like the Redskins minus 2.5 against the Giants. We went with the Redskins over the Giants a few weeks ago, and we barely got there. That was a close game. It was 20-19. The Giants won as 2.5-point favorites. But if you look at that game closely, the Redskins outgained the Giants by 150 yards. It was the Giants scoring 14 points off Kyle Allen turnovers. I don't think Kyle Allen's going to turn the ball over twice to give the Giants two touchdowns again. If anything, Daniel Jones might do that. The Giants are coming off the deflating Monday night loss against the Buccaneers. So I think that the Giants could be flat this time, and the Redskins have had a week off to prepare for this game. So I like them here. I also like the Chargers to pick them against the Raiders. The Chargers are going to maybe get back Trey Turner, which is a big deal. He's a Pro Bowl guard, and they've missed him the entire year. So with Brian Bulaga coming back last week and maybe Trey Turner this time, that'll give Justin Herbert a big advantage against the Raider defense that isn't good. And then the Raiders, they might be missing three offensive linemen. Richie Incognito's been out. Trent Brown is back on the COVID list. And Colton Miller didn't practice at all this week. So he's questionable. He may miss this game. So if that happens, I just think the Chargers just have a big advantage in the trenches. So I like them to win. Also, Steelers minus 14. Garrett Gilbert starting for Dallas. So I don't think Dallas has much of a chance against the Steelers. I wouldn't go crazy with this game. I think the Steelers might be a little deflated off that Baltimore win, but they still should be able to beat Dallas pretty easily. So those are the WalterFootball.com Week 9 NFL picks. Back to you, Scott.
Thanks, Walter, and thank you for listening. If you haven't given us a 5-star review on iTunes yet, if you could go ahead and do that for us, really appreciate it. Easy way to help out the show if you like what we're doing. Doesn't take you much time, doesn't cost you any money, but it goes a long way to help us out. So if you could go ahead and do that for us, we'd be quite grateful. And for the latest and greatest in New York Jets podcasts, you know where to go. That's Turn on the Jets Digital and turnonthejets.com.